We're here to talk about end-of-life matters, conversations we are dying to have. This is a workshop that's going to be held Saturday from 2 to 4.30 at the Stewart Street Church Hall. And Karen and Ty are facilitating the workshop. Is this a good word to use?
Yeah, we've been organising it.
Come in closer, Ty.
And you know, maybe it is at the Stewart Street Church Hall, but maybe I could just preempt the conversation by saying this is not about anything religious or spiritual. It's a very practical workshop about...
Okay. Yes. Things. Yeah. Good point. Yeah. Because it's in a church hall. Yeah. Yeah. We need to understand that. So, what is it like? What's your elevator speech about this event?
This event. Well, it's being run by Time Bank Raglan, and once a year, Time Bank aims to have an event that just encourages conversations that we hear that people are wanting to have in the community. Like last time we did it about alternative currencies or complementary currencies, of course, Time Bank is one. But this year, we actually, from time to time, we have potluck dinners and we watch interesting films about community action and community things. And we watched a really interesting one about a community group in Australia, in Port Kembla, who went down this road in terms of taking more community ownership of the process of looking after their loved ones as they go through terminal illness to dying and then into the post, you know, what you do after with the body and all of that. Yeah. And it was very inspiring. So we thought, you know, can we, you know, start talking about how we can maybe do something like that in Raglan? I mean, part of it is the problem for, you know, poorer families and communities is they have very high cost of funerals. You know, you can pay an average price is about $10,000, and it is profit driven. You know, like Australian corporations are buying up graveyards, crematoriums, and funeral parlours right across New Zealand. And the whole thing is getting more and more monetized and corporatized. So we want to take it the other way. We want some more community ownership of the process, if we can. I guess that's very much my personal point of view. I don't know what other people at the event are going to think about all of this, but that's something that has motivated me to get involved.
Mm. And Karen, your connection to dying and this event, because this is an area that you kind of... existent, operate in,
I actually go into the homes of people who have terminal illness here in Whangaroa and also sometimes in Kirikiriroa, Hamilton, for either hospice or I'm sometimes also shoulder tapped by district nurses here. And it's really about companioning the person and their whānau through the transition and also being there, being someone they can talk to, giving their carer a rest. Sometimes they can say things that they don't feel comfortable saying to people who are closer to them, you know, around their concerns around the process. Yeah. So it's good to sort of be familiar with all that. Sometimes it's helping helping someone get their affairs in order. It's very different for every person. Sometimes it's reading their scriptures to them, or and as they get closer to dying, sometimes it's just sitting with them or playing some music if they like that, massaging their feet, or just being still and being silent and just being with them.
And what a lot of people would, I imagine most people would be kind of uncomfortable in those situations. So what is it that draws you there that you're comfortable with and in fact you seem to gravitate to it?
Well, my first experience that I recall with death was actually as a 2 or 3 year old at my uncle who was 40, his deathbed, dying of cancer. And I as a little child remember that because as a child you have... you know, you're very tuned into when something is different and something is electrically, emotionally charged, etc. So that was my first experience. Then I lost a boyfriend very early in my life in a logging accident. Mm. And that followed with a whole lot of actually other accidents and young people getting terminal illnesses and that sort of thing. So I was opened up at a fairly early age to this type of work.
Sort of forced to get comfortable with it in some ways. Yeah,
that's right.
But even so, I think there are some people who are drawn to that. I think you're probably drawn to wanting to help out in that area. Others are drawn to different things in life.
I think so.
I think when Carl was killed, I realised that, I felt we could do death better. I felt there was something that we were missing. It was our ancestors used to handle all this sort of thing. And more personally, they used to have bodies at home. They used to wash them themselves, etc., etc. But we don't tend to... Pākehā don't tend to do that anymore. Of course, Māori do the whole tangi, etc. And such a wonderful process and so healing.
So we should talk about what this event is going to be like. It's from 2 to 4:30 on Saturday. What's going to be happening? What's it like? Is it a talk, a lecture? What sort of thing?
No, there will be a little bit of scene setting at the very beginning. People will have an opportunity to say why they're there, what it is they want to learn. But the majority of the time we're going to use something called open space. And the way that works is in the hall we will have 9 tables around the space, and each one has a different aspect of this whole subject or conversation. And at each table, there's a kind of facilitator person who has some expertise.
Yeah.
But the whole kind of feeling of the event is that there's a lot of knowledge in our community, and this is about sharing it with one another.
Right.
So the lovely thing about doing it around these 9 tables is that at any one time there will only be a handful of people around each table, because it's a delicate, sensitive conversation and you don't really want to be having it in front of 50 people. So this enables people to be able to, talk intimately about the things that they want to know or the things that they want to share. And then at some point, the key points from that will come back to the larger group. And as the time bank, we'd like to pull the conversations and the main points together to kind of figure out where to go from here, because we see this as a starting point for something in our community. It's not just going to be a conversation that we just have and then we forget about it, because there's so many things that could come out of it, like a coffin club. I know one was started here a little while ago, but it didn't continue. But making your own coffins would take quite a slice out of the cost of your funeral. There's lots of places it could go.
And so who is the event for?
Everybody who's going to die at some time, or think that their loved ones are going to die at some time, or is interested in... Because I think in our culture, especially our Pākehā culture, we kind of veer away from having these conversations. And, I've heard so many stories about that it's such a shock when it happens that, one can be prepared to some extent. I mean, for interest, our lovely Meredith is holding a table that's all about creating a When I Die box. So it's about having this place where everything that's relevant for your family after you've passed, all the practical stuff, the legal bits, the wills, the bank accounts, all of that, but plus anything you want to pass on in terms of stories, your life story, special mementos, things that have been important for your family to know about your life. And it's all in one place, so they just, that would make such a difference, I think, for the family to just... And if you have got things that you want about how you want your body to be managed and all of that, it's all there. So you're not in the family's not in a quandary about what the hell do we do.
So that's one of the 9 tables, Meredith's doing, that end-of-life box.
Yep.
What did you call it?
When
I Die box. Sorry, yeah. So what are the other 8? Tell us what the other 8 tables are, because people might be particularly keen to hear about one or the other, I think.
Okay. We're doing Rangi Kiriopa. The beautiful Rangi Kiriopa is doing a beautiful table on Māori approaches to death. Te Reringa Wairua, which is the place of spirits leaping, that is what she's called the table, which I think gives you a hint of the types of things that might come up at that table. We've also got We've also got legal matters with Hayley.
Yeah, our local lawyer Hayley is going to be there.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, because that's actually quite a... That can be quite a big one.
It's a significant one.
But you don't find
one.
Out until after someone's died. I know the issue of probate can be a headache. That's where a spouse might not have access to a bank account and has to be legally proved they're allowed access. It takes a long time. I know this from my mother's experience. It takes a long time and it costs a lot of money. And you want to avoid it, as far as I can tell.
That's right. There's a lot to know about this subject. And, you know, I think what Karen and I would love is that we actually we learn from this event and we find people in the community, like our wonderful Karen, who do hold a lot of knowledge, so that there's people you can go to you know, talk to.
Yeah, at least you know who to ask the question.
You know who to ask the question to, because none of us are going to hold all of this knowledge. But, you know... individual people hold. I mean, it's been amazing since everywhere I go at the moment, because the lovely Chronicle put that...
you guys were on the cover.
We were on the cover, so we got a little bit of attention. And everywhere I go, I walked into Indies and some woman I've known for years but didn't know, she was a hospice nurse and wanted to talk heaps about it.
Right.
And then another woman in my ukulele group, I find out she was a social worker with elderly people and really into advanced care plans.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like, it's, you know, the knowledge is all around us, but we don't know where it is until we know where it is, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
Can I just say too, Aaron, that although we said that 10,000 was an average of the cost, that I consider that to be not even just conservative, that's actually on the lower end, that often funerals, ceremonies, etc., they're ending up being in the teens, potentially, like higher than 10,000, might be 12, might be, but up. It's not like 10K and lower generally. But we can bring, with knowledge, people can do a lot more themselves than they believe they can.
I'm struggling to figure out where the money goes.
Yeah.
I guess if you get a fancy coffin, that's going to cost a lot of money. I know that.
We don't have to use a funeral parlour. And sorry to all our funeral parlours. I'm sure that, you know, you do good business and you do good work. But it's not essential. I think that's one of the things would be interesting to come out of this, what the other choices are and how we can do it. Like, for example, some communities. Actually, this is a bit of a movement at the moment. A number of communities around Aotearoa are having these conversations, and I think it's over in Whakatane. They've bought, what are they called, those cooling pads?
Yeah,
you know, so it means
so if you
don't want to embalm, you can have the body at home of your loved one and keep them cool on a kind of plug-in cooling pad.
Because that's a real practicality. Once
it's
someone's
really
dead,
they
start to go back to the earth, basically.
It's also, even if you don't have those, you can still keep the body at home with cooling some other kind of...
Ice packs. Ice packs, that was
more
the phrase I was going
and
for.
And we've done that. Yeah. We've done that here in Raglan.
Yeah, harder in summer than winter.
Yeah.
That's
so
a real thing.
A lot of these things are kind of very practical. And, you know, maybe we could hold a cooling pad in the community to be borrowed around.
So what? So we've talked. Have we talked about two or three of the?
Shall I get back to the light?
Yeah, I'm just going to bring that in a bit closer. Sorry.
Okay. Well, lovely Betty Diprose and her friend Anne have got a table about recording life stories.
Okay.
So Anne does the written ones, and Betty and her husband Ray do videos of people who know that their hours are numbered and want to record their life stories in that way. So that really
might help educate people if they've got, whānau members who are getting older and they'd like to start, you know, recording those stories. It's perhaps will help them know what sort of questions to ask or what sort of, you know, how you can record those things.
It's making me think, because I'm not as young as I used to be, you know.
Yeah.
I'd quite like to record more of my life story to date, so that, you know, my my children and grandchildren will have that, you know.
Because you probably seem to come from a black and white television era, all the sort of stuff that seems astonishing. One TV channel,
all of
seems
that.
Astonishing to to today's kids. Yeah.
That's right, right, yeah, yeah.
Had to walk places sometimes.
They were different times, all right, yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll do one more and then you do one, Karen. And we've got a table about the funeral celebration, the celebration ceremony, and how it, you know, it doesn't have to be done in a church. It can be done however you want it to. And you know, you can bring ritual to it. There's so many ways that you can do it. And we've got Therese Hogan? Itai's Therese,
yeah,
who's really strong on ritual, and Linda Mayo, who's a funeral celebrant, on that table, talking about or listening to questions and answering
what the options
about that,
are.
What the options are for that.
These days, people are very big on creating a wedding their own way. You know. Young couples
right.
get together. It has been like that for a while.
That's right.
In fact, my wedding raised a few eyebrows amongst the older members of the family because they thought it was a bit odd, but it wasn't very. But are you saying we should bring that? Like, we wanted to create our own event. Can we do that with a funeral?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I see no reason.
It still feels
why you
weird.
Can't.
It still feels slightly weird to me, but.
Yeah. But well, and the interesting thing is, I think to be a wedding celebrant, you have to, you know, have the ticket and all of that. But to be a funeral, anybody can be your funeral celebrant.
Mm. Yeah, so you can just ask, and you can ask people, but you might want to ask them before you die.
Yeah,
or before they die. Actually, thinking about it, yeah. Okay, so how many?
Likewise, Aaron. Technically, at the moment, we can also be a funeral director. That you don't need a ticket to be a funeral director.
Okay.
This is where we can do certain things ourselves. So I'll just throw that out there.
Yep.
Couple more tables. Oh, regarding the celebration we were just talking about, that also includes things like the role of ritual, perhaps in leading up to a death or around the death itself, or perhaps as memorial later, how people can create their own ritual around these things, which can be incredibly healing. Mm. So it's not just about the funeral moments, you know, the funeral ceremony. Some other tables we've got grieving, which will be with, we're not 100% sure because we've got a couple of sick people in the community at the moment, but so we've got one about, you know, how to move through that. And we've also got terminal illness, advanced care plan, and options for your care, or your loved one. If you suddenly have a terminal diagnosis and you get to that, you're heading towards that point where you're going to need more intense care, can we do that in the community? And how does that work? Because a lot of people don't even know that you can be in your own home. You don't have to be shipped off to hospital. You don't necessarily have to, you know, go to hospice. Hospice works with people in the community. I'm actually also a hospice volunteer here in Raglan. And so there are options where I think it would really suit people to be in their own environment and with their own whānau and their pets and the sea. And
for many
the,
people.
Yeah.
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 And there's a very important one that we haven't probably talked about, and that's the table you're going to be holding about more green, sustainable kind of treatment of the body after death.
Yeah, green burial.
Green burial. Green burial.
So tell us, for people, because I've heard the phrase, but what is that actually?
Okay, well, green burial, it involves natural care of the body, so there's no embalming. So you're not going to have all your blood sucked out of you and then have another chemical pumped in there.
Is that what normally happens?
That's what happens if someone wants to be is going to be embalmed.
Okay,
yes, it is. Yeah. That you don't have to be embalmed. So everything that if the person's being buried, you know, as a green burial, everything has to be biodegradable. Everything to do with the coffin, what the person's wearing, whatever goes in with them, that it just goes back to the earth.
Yeah.
Also, Newstead at Hamilton, you know, Hamilton Cemetery there, they've got Forest Grove, which is, and it's been going for about 10 years now, the green burial site there. And what happens is they plant a tree on top of the grave. You don't have gravestones. They do get a little marker in the beginning so you know where that person is, and they've got a GPS plot, but actually it returns to regenerative bush, and that's really beautiful and requires, from a council perspective, it requires like less mowing and all that, but it's really environmentally, I think if you've got environmental values, it's quite a good way of fulfilling those at the end of your life.
So there would be no sign aside from a particular tree that you'd have to know about.
No sign.
So that might not be for everyone, I guess.
No, it won't be for everyone. It's not for everyone.
Yeah, but that's obviously increasingly popular.
Yeah,
from what you're saying. Yeah, okay.
I've got a few photos on my phone that I can show people at the event of what the actual green burial site in Hamilton looks like at the moment.
Okay, yeah. Because so it's been going for 10 years, so we'll have some reasonably mature trees.
Mm.
You choose your tree as well?
I think it's not as well known as people, as you might think, which is why part of, you know, we're doing this event.
Yeah.
And so I personally would have expected there to be more people in that than there currently are. But I do think it's growing. Ha ha. Boom, boom.
I think if people aren't prepared for a death, then you just follow the standard route, because at that point it's very hard to think clearly or want to
absolutely
start
absolutely.
Planning. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. And often too, it's whānau differences. You know, family differences in what people, especially if someone hasn't left clear, a clear idea of what they would like for themselves, then sometimes there can be difficulties in the family in terms of, you know, what would dad really want or all that. And so sometimes, you know, family dynamics
burial,
come into that. Because to be honest, I thought about myself. I thought, I really don't care what happens after I'm gone. Like, that's.
I have quite a lot of that too. I just want it to be as easy as possible for my family.
Yeah, but if they then end up having to try and decide.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's a really important perspective. So, or arguing about it, yeah.
So some guidance is really useful in terms of what you would like.
I would like them to not waste any money. That's really
me too.
This is such a topic, because you were talking about $10,000. Expect to spend 10 or more
plus,
perhaps. I mean,
some families are in debt for years after the funeral. It's not right.
Yeah, and we were talking before we went on the air. I've heard about people who don't go and pick up the ashes from the crematorium because they can't afford to pay.
Yeah,
and there's a bank of uncollected ashes there.
Yeah,
which, I mean, I'm not surprised that people can't afford to pay. People can't afford to live or eat.
I know.
So they certainly can't afford to die.
Yeah.
Mm.
To my mind, it's not something that should be in the for-profit world. This is people at their most vulnerable. And
something I wonder about is for the baby boomer generation, which has been collectively probably the most wealthy generation we've had. I noticed 20 years ago that industries were gearing up around retirement homes.
Mm-hmm.
Because they could see there was going to be a lot of money there.
Yeah.
Now it sounds like, or maybe already have been happening, that industry is geared up around
that there's going to be more people dying.
Getting the last money out of people's pockets as they slip off.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't feel good.
No.
Obviously there is genuine service, there's genuine things happening.
Of course.
But how cheaply can we do it?
Yeah.
That's what I want to know at this point in time.
I'm not going to specifically answer that question because it's quite a big one.
I want to quote Karen.
But no, you don't. No, you don't. Now you've lost my train of thought.
Sorry. So it was how can we get the cost down, basically?
I think we can do it for a whole lot less if we do use community resources and we come together and support each other, like communities used to do in the past.
Yeah,
there was somebody in the community who was skilled at preparing and washing bodies.
Well, it was normally the family that did that, and actually, incidentally, the early funeral directors were actually builders who built made coffins, and so they would take a coffin to someone, and then they would pick up the coffin at the end and get it to its destination. So, funnily enough, our builders used to be
our funeral
directors, in a way.
Yeah,
they might frighten a few builders out there.
I mean, we don't have to embalm; that's an expense.
Yeah, but you will need to. But you've got to have something to
keep the body cool.
Definitely,
and probably bury earlier, or do whatever you're doing, cremate earlier. If
there is such a thing as direct cremation, and that is the cheapest option. People do need a coffin if they're going to be cremated, but they can be very cheap. They can be made of cardboard or made of,
plywood.
Plywood, etc. So there's that option. They do not let people be cremated in a shroud. I know some people that you can be in a shroud if you're being buried, but for the cremator, they do need a coffin.
There's health and safety reasons for the staff, I guess so.
Yeah. But that the cheapest way is a direct cremation without even a service. But you can do a service at home, which doesn't have to cost you anything either.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, there's service and there's service. Mm. There's this huge thing with very open to the public, you know, and then there's smaller, more intimate events. And there's nothing wrong with that either.
You know, especially if you live to a ripe old age, you know, by the time you go, most of your peers have gone. And so you only want a small intimate service,
yeah,
really,
yeah,
you
know? My father was 70 when he died, and that was and he was still working, and that was a very full funeral.
Because you're still active at 70, she says.
Yes. I think I want to see a cost breakdown to understand at this point.
Well,
in time.
Look, I've got cost breakdowns.
Yeah, so if people go along.
Yes,
on Saturday,
I've got several from different funeral directors, including the casketeers from TV.
I haven't seen that. So that was
have you not?
That was a new word to me. So,
I quite
like that word.
It's a TV program,
right?
With the Tippinies up in Auckland.
So it's sort of documentary style or real life style, something like that.
They're a family funeral director, aren't they?
Māori funeral directors. It's been a big hit internationally. Because they bring a lot of te ao Māori into their show as well, and it's also quite funny.
Yeah.
You've got to see it.
Yeah, maybe I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, folks, we're talking to Di Jennings and Karen Britton about the workshop End of Life Matters, Conversations We're Dying to Have. And there's going to be, I'll just recap, we've 9 tables there with different conversations going around each table. And you were saying to me, Di, before we went on the air, about there's some joy in this. The joy in dying? Was that the exact phrase you used? I struggled with that, but I want to know more.
It's not lacking in joy. I mean, my personal experience of being with my parents as they died, and what I find is that people get completely real around that time. There's no pretense. Mm. There's no social face. It's just very heartfelt. And there's something. And so people tend to kind of go from tears to laughter quite readily.
Yeah.
It's actually an incredibly precious time, which I have experienced as being very sad, but also having elements of joy. At that time,
yeah.
So that would be my response.
There's a beautiful egolessness in people at end of life, because all the worldly stuff has fallen away and they just come kind of down to their essence.
Yeah.
And it's a really beautiful space to be in, and very honouring to be even with a dying person.
Yeah,
it's. Yeah, our culture struggles with it. As you said, our Pākehā culture we don't know what to do with it. And I've been to funerals and I've seen people stand up and talk about someone, and you can see they want to talk about really deep things, but they can't because they're not, I don't know why. Mm. I remember when my father died, I must have been to a funeral a little bit beforehand, and I thought, I really don't want to do that. I don't want to get up and talk about superficial stuff that was still about him. So I tried hard to talk about, you know, I don't really have to psych myself up, because I just didn't want it to be a wasted opportunity, I guess. Because you only have one funeral, I presume.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you have a series of rolling funerals? How does that work? It could be very expensive.
It's a special moment, all right.
Yeah.
To honor a life.
And so, are you guys personally prepared? Have you prepared for your end of life?
I've started.
You've started.
And I kind of I feel like this event is going to really motivate me to get that.
Yes.
You know, to get some things in place. I need to review my will. You know, there's a few things I know I need to do, but I thought I'd wait for this event so that I could have more information and to do as much as possible locally too. Like, I'd prefer to, you know, use a local lawyer than public trust, for example, you know.
Yeah.
So I think I'll even though I'm one of the organizers, will actually learn an awful lot about this event. I'd also just like to say this is not just for Time Bank people. It's for welcome to the whole community, and it's completely free.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, we haven't talked about a cost because there is no cost. Yeah.
Yeah.
Karen, are you ready to go?
I'm ready, but I'll also say, tagging on Di there, that there is also a cup of tea and cake. So there's a cup of tea and cake there as well.
Yep, it always makes a difference.
It's always a bit of a highlight. Yes, I'm prepared. It's a subject I've been thinking of throughout my life. Every day I think about it. I have my advanced care plan. I have what I would like done with my body. Hopefully I will have a home funeral, you know, like my body at home. Yeah. I even know the person that will probably do that for me.
Have you asked them?
I've mentioned it to her, and I know she's right up for it.
Okay, cool.
We have experience of this together.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Interesting.
The answer is yes.
Yeah.
And just a plug for Time Bank, as usual, Time Bank members are doing the baking and have done lots to help organise this event. And I just love the way that the Time Bank just kind of brings the fuel to make a lot of these community things happen. I can't say that without acknowledging our Environment Centre. I'm just looking at their door next door here, who enable our Time Bank to happen because they pay our coordinator and look after us in that way.
Yeah.
So thank you, WEC.
Yeah, and thank you guys for coming in. Karen, you've got one more thing you want to say?
Can I just say too that death isn't a failure. It's a natural part of life.
Yeah.
Serving the transition of someone at the end of life is also very special. They're all great opportunities to learn and develop as human beings, just being in this space.
Thank you, Aaron. Thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.
And Di, could you hang around, because we want to talk about Live and Local in a minute, but I'm going to like have a break and come back to it because these are such different topics.
Yes.
Or maybe they're not. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, folks, so we're gonna have a quick break and back in a moment.